Hey, welcome to Our Altered World. If you've been feeling overwhelmed by the giant that is climate change, you're not alone. I'm Neil, and here we celebrate the inspiring work of individuals and organizations making real positive strides that you may not have heard about. My hope is for our conversations here to make you feel inspired and reconnect to our planet. And with that being said, I'd love to introduce Christine from World Tree Productions.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Christine. I'm so happy that you were able to join us today. And I'm so excited for all our listeners to hear about the amazing work that you've been doing. And for that, I would love for you to tell our listeners a bit about yourself and World Tree Productions.
Sure. So I am the CEO of World Tree Productions, and we create a TV show that's kind of a cross between Shark Tank and Amazing Race. It's a reality TV show targeting Gen Z eco entrepreneurs. And one of the entrepreneurs at the end of our show wins $50,000 to scale their business, plus a 12-month mentorship to really guide them as they start growing their company.
It's incredible. How did you develop the concept for Plus One Eco Odyssey? What inspired this eco adventure reality?
I think, you know, honestly, it came from a place where I just was tired of my corporate job. I kept thinking, what am I doing? You know, how can I make what I know and do for a living make sense for the world? How can I make the world a better place? What can I do to make a difference? So I really dug deep and talked a lot with my husband about, can I go back into being an entrepreneur again? Because I had been an entrepreneur five times over. This was my sixth venture. So I'd been an entrepreneur, you know, training race car drivers at one point in my life, to being a consultant at one point in my life, to developing low-cost ventilators during the COVID-19 pandemic with my brother.
Wow, Christine, you have been all over the pot.
Yes.
Picking up those skills. Amazing.
Yeah. So part of being an entrepreneur is really just digging deep and deciding, you know, what really lights you up inside. So what I decided to do is develop a show. And this was really born out of focus groups I had done, Neil. So I had gone to Gen Z and I did a number of focus groups.
I love a focus group. I have done so many workshops. I've run so many workshops and you just get so much out of them. So I love that you did that.
Absolutely. And the top three things that kept coming back from every focus group about what their top concerns were, number one was climate change. They look at it, and you mentioned this in the beginning of your show, it is a giant problem and they just don't know how to take a bite out of it. So that was number one. Number two was mental health. And number three was racial and gender equity. So I thought, okay, how can I weave all
the three global problems, really?
Of course. Of course. Yes. So how can I weave these into a narrative or a story that makes sense? And so that really was the genesis of Plus One Eco Odyssey. We decided to go out and cast the world over for seven eco entrepreneurs between the ages of 18 and 35. And we got amazing contestants from all over. And they're really different too, like different personalities. No one was like the showboater. Well, maybe one.
Yes. Okay. That's amazing. Before we jump into all the juicy contestant stuff, how would you describe the show's mission? Because we're going to have loads of listeners here going to be like, oh, what is Plus One Eco Odyssey? What is the show's mission? And what's the format to everyone hearing about it for the first time today?
Sure, sure. So the mission of Plus One Eco Odyssey is really for Gen Z to tackle climate change. So for them to do that, I really want them to innovate to create a more sustainable world. That's the mission. And the way that we do that is we bring our plus ones along, right? So it's not about just me doing something. It's about me bringing my community along and us really trying to take a stab at climate change. And part of this is reinforcing and empowering Gen Z to innovate. So what I do with my show is I showcase different contestants, what their eco innovation is, how it's local to wherever we are in the world. It could be in South Africa, it could be in India, it could be in the UK. And how are they tackling climate change locally? Because that's what's going to inspire people. What's happening in their backyard? Right? How do I tackle this?
Incredible. So you've already kind of alluded a bit to the contestants. Walk us through your casting process. How did you identify and select the contestants? You know, making sure they had the right mix of that spirit, the community outlook that you're looking for, and of course, environmental passion, what their drive.
Sure. So we have a casting process where people submit an application, but the big one that we really take a look at, in addition to kind of vetting the company that they've stood up, is really the video. So we ask everyone to submit a 60-second video telling us about themselves, so we get a sense of what their personality is like, and telling us what's really important to them and why they're doing what they're doing in terms of their eco-innovation.
Absolutely. I think that would stand out so much more than a written form. You know, really, it's very hard to scream off the page, but when you can actually see the passion in someone's eyes, you know, okay, they've got it. They need to be in this.
100%.
Okay, so the casting process, you had these videos, and how many did you have to troll through? How was the casting process for the first season?
So in season one, we had about 150 applicants. We expect a lot more. So we were brand new. So this is a brand new show.
Over like two nearly 3 hours of footage that you already have to go through of all these contestants, and then thinking on top of that, okay, how they're all doing this amazing work. That must have been a sensational experience, but like, oh my God, there's all these kids doing such great work around the world.
It really lit me up. I was like, this is fantastic. There's so many people from so many different places across the globe that are really, truly committed to making sure we have a sustainable future. So that was great. Like, it was just one of those moments where you're like, okay, I know we're doing something right.
Yes, you feel it. You can feel that spark sometimes. Mm-hmm. Now, when it came to these auditions, these tapes that people were sending through, what was the criteria or challenges that you had to test their commitment before, you know, you actually brought them on to before filming began?
So first we check and we make sure from an entrepreneurial standpoint that their business is legitimate, that they actually have created a business, they've got a business name, it's registered, they have a website, they have at least one customer. And then we check all that, we verify it. But what really happens is we go through and we think about who is really going to change the world with this idea. So there are some big ideas that these contestants are trying to tackle. One is trying to feed the world. That's basically his mission. He wants to feed the world. And he's in India and amazing guy. Another one was tackling fast fashion. These are big endemic ideas that people are trying to solve. So we're looking for the big idea, not the small one, the big one. What are they really trying to do? How do we remove nitrates from our water? There's a lot of different ideas that we took a look at, but the ones that really could have the most impact were the ones that we were trying to feature on the show.
What an incredible opportunity. You know, sometimes I feel like within the millennial generation and Gen Z as well, you're kind of taught, oh, you know, start small and then grow outwards. But you're saying, no, start big with the big problems. And yeah, we're here for that. Okay, so with these big problems, how do you balance the entertainment value, you know, with a broad appeal, with that educational depth? You know, we're talking about huge, complex environmental issues, hunger, fast fashion. We're talking about hundreds and thousands of tons, you know, going into landfill, polluting our oceans. These are quite negative touch points, you know. Sometimes people get a bit, all right, yeah. How does that balance come in for you guys?
It's such a good question because mental health, as you know, is the number two issue that Gen Z is facing. And part of the reason why they're so hamstrung in terms of tackling climate change is it's so overwhelming. So what we try to do is create a sandwich. So we have the kind of shit moment in the middle, excuse me for saying that, but we couch it with the positivity, right? We focus on the eco-entrepreneur, what they're doing, their inspiring journey, who has mentored them, who are their inspirations. We tackle the problem in the middle. And then at the end, we show how it's helping. So the idea is to show a positive, and that's why I call it kind of a nicer version of Shark Tank. We're trying to showcase the positivity of what these young people are doing to really innovate their way out of a climate crisis.
Exactly, because they are going to be the ones to inherit it. You make these references to Shark Tank, an amazing show. It gives general entrepreneurs so much opportunity to market, ship, and upsell their product, get leveraged by working with these great partners. But more often than not, they're adding to these problems. They're adding to problems like this by creating more products, more outlets to sell. You know, we're talking about fast fashion here. A lot of fashion brands have gone through there and they've blown up since, but this is just another product in the market. So having an opportunity like this where it's counteracting something, I think is absolutely fantastic.
Well, one other thing I want to point out too, unlike Shark Tank, and I don't know that this is still happening, but I know at one point it did happen during the show, not to belittle them at all, but they required a percentage of the company had to go to the producers of the show. And we don't do that. So the 50,000 that you win on our show goes directly to your company. So it's meant to help you scale. And the other thing that we do too is, unlike VC firms where you see about 30% of total VC funds going to early stage companies, we're specifically focused on early stage companies because we think this is where most of the ideas are coming from.
Who needs 30%? 100%. Yeah. That's what we're saying. Yes.
Right. And the other key thing too is mentorship. So if you're 19 years old and you've never owned a business before, you've never been in a business before, you need people that have experience that can have your back. So what we do is we basically customize a mentoring program for the winner based on what their needs are. Now, everyone needs... They need someone in finance to help them out. They need someone in legal to help them out. There are general areas where we have experts that come in and help them. But we don't release the money until they do their mentoring session. So there's a real kind of responsibility there, you know, responsibility on the winner to make sure that they do go through the mentoring session so that we release the funds.
Yes. Oh, good. But we're getting ahead of ourselves here, Christine. We're already talking about a winner. We've got to talk about the contestants still. Now, come on. So during the show, you had these contestants, right? And they were facing challenges. Can you talk us through how you came up with these challenges and what were these segments and how were you most excited that they would tackle them and why?
So in every episode, we had one business related challenge. And sometimes we would throw in a mini challenge just to toss things up and make things kind of interesting.
That's so great for you, though, because I love that you had so many resources to pull from, having worked in so many industries, knowing, OK, there are so many ways your business can be affected by working throughout all these different sectors. So you're coming forward with a really business point to be like, OK, I've got some ideas here.
Yeah. And it was interesting too. So a lot of the earlier stage, I would say, entrepreneurs struggled a little bit with some of the business challenges just because this is all new.
Describe some of the business challenges for us.
So for example, we had one I called Think on Your Feet, where we would give the contestants 5 questions. They had to answer in 20 seconds or less. And it was all about
the countdown clock playing in
correct,
the background.
Correct. Yeah. And they had 20 seconds and it was really like you had to think fast, you had to think on your feet. And at the same time, we tossed a ball at them. They had to catch a ball while they were answering these questions like, what is your total addressable market? How do you get your first customer? You know what I mean? Yes. Things like that. And based
absolutely. On the I've been in these VC meetings. It's like presentation, question, move ball. Like they want to know.
Rapid fire. Yes, for sure.
On it. So I love that as a challenge base. Absolutely.
And you know what was funny? Not one of them dropped the ball. Which is really interesting to me because Gen Z, I mean, my God, they of any generation, so they're the largest generation ever, but they are so agile when it comes to multitasking. It was funny, like some of them even you could tell, like you could see them concentrating harder as you threw the ball to them and some of them caught it with one hand. I was like, oh my God.
I feel like I need to be put into practice with this now. Just like have a ball thrown at me while we're having this conversation.
Throw it at your face and you catch it and you're answering the question at the same time. It was amazing. So really impressive like performance on all of the contestants' parts. I mean, just incredible. And even some of the more soft-spoken, shyer contestants thrived in this particular challenge. I think it's because they were forced to really focus and provide an answer.
That is incredible. And on that note, we're going to take our first break to hear from our station sponsors and we'll be back soon.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Christine from World Tree Productions. We just touched base on the insights of her amazing show, Plus One Eco Odyssey. You know, Christine has gone out of her way to take her own learnings and plug that into a mission-inspired show that is purpose-driven for the youth of our planet. And honestly, I am just so excited about where it's been and where it's going and for you all to learn more about what's going on. We just learned about the contestants, how the scope was done for bringing them on board, and the challenges that Christine came up with to really give them the real life hurdles that they'll face trying to bring their product, their market, their business out into the real world. Now, Christine, was there any unexpected discoveries as you had all these contestants on, as they're sending all their tapes in, about ecosystems or species or environmental practices that shocked you? Or even during production, you were like, oh, I didn't know that was going on, but this is incredible that they're doing that.
Well, there were a couple of moments like that. So during the casting process, Jaya was tackling fast fashion. When she provided all the statistics about it being the second biggest polluter in the world, and the fact that she had the first non-synthetic, non-oil-based petroleum stretchy fabric developed entirely from biowaste, it blew my mind. And I think the big aha moment for me was just how much garbage is generated by these companies that they're churning out these production lines, you know, every six months. And people are buying, you know, a t-shirt and wearing it maybe once, and it takes 200 liters of water just to produce one shirt. So think about that. That doesn't even include like the dyeing mechanism and all that other, all those other things that pollute rivers and water.
Yes. Exactly.
So that was just mind-blowing for me. But one of the most, and it's funny, in unscripted television, you can't predict what's going to happen. You can't predict how someone's going to react, what they'll share.
Yes.
We had a really, really poignant moment with Greg from Ireland. Love Greg. He had a company called Water Sustainability Ireland. And
shout out to Greg.
Yes, yes. And he shared with us his mental health journey. So he struggled massively in his teens and early 20s with anxiety and depression, and nothing seemed to be working. And at one point, it culminated in him, and he shared this with us, with him trying to take his own life. And that was such a shocking moment. I was, you know, you're behind a camera.
It's even affecting you still now.
You're behind a camera, but you're like, this is a real person struggling. So at any rate, he shared that, but he also shared how he overcame it. So for him, he tried so many different things. And the main thing he wanted to share was talk to somebody, get help, share your story, but mainly find out what works for you. And for him, it was cold plunges. So he lives in Ireland, you know, he's entirely surrounded by water. Every day he would go out, he would take a swim in the water. And what happens with cold plunges is it kind of breaks your brain from being in this negative thought loop. And so he would go out, he would do these cold plunges, and he found that it completely alleviated all those negative thoughts coming into his brain. And he found that he had control of the situation versus his brain kind of going off in a direction and he was just all along for the ride, right? So at the end of that show, one of the things that we did was he included a link to, you know, mental health resources to make sure that, you know, our viewers understand, you know, there are ways to address this. Cold plunges work for him, but therapy or other things can work for other people, or getting a dog, you know what I mean, or a cat, or some companion that can help you feel like you're not alone, and you're not.
100%. And I love the connectivity on that point with you guys, having him on the show, giving him that platform to speak about this, having that connectivity with the viewers to also speak to his story and how he overcame his struggles, his challenges, which viewers can then reflect and see their own lives in these people. You know, it's like, oh, he's gotten through it, I can get through it. He did it this way, or maybe I can try that, or try and find something that works for me. It shows that shows like this, opportunities like this, they aren't pigeonholed into sometimes the niches that they find themselves in. They can have so many long-term knock-on effects, positive knock-on effects for the viewers, the media companies that distribute them and everything. So that's incredible. And I love that you touched on that just there.
Yeah. There was, now, if you don't mind, do you mind if I bring up one other thing that happened on the show, which was just
go
amazing?
For it, Christine. We're here for you. Yeah. We want to learn about it.
Yeah. So I went to Stockholm World Water Week. And this is part of the show too. Like, this is me testing out to see, can I find judges? Can I find experts that would want to come onto the show? And I did. I found Will Sarney. He's a world-renowned water expert. But I also talked with a woman from Navajo Nation. Stockholm World Water Week did a special panel on Indigenous peoples and how climate change affects them tremendously and how they don't have access to resources. And I found from this woman that I had been speaking with that Navajo Nation, which is a sovereign nation in the United States, but also they're all U.S. citizens, 30% of Navajo Nation doesn't have access to clean running water. 30%. That blew my mind. I said, you've got to be kidding me. And I said, we have to do something. So we ended up featuring on the show the first female vice president of Navajo Nation. She was a guest judge for our semifinals and our finals. And we also did a special panel segment with a number of people from Navajo Nation to talk about water issues. Our host at the time was First Nations Anishinaabe, and she was also a water rights champion. So she was part of that. And I think it was really compelling to see, you know, they're indigenous peoples, but their water access, there are different ways that water access impacts those nations differently. So for Navajo, it's just that they didn't have access. So they're 2 hours north of Scottsdale, Arizona. And, you know, in Scottsdale, you could trip over golf courses, bright green golf courses. And then you go 2 hours north and it's just barren wasteland.
Arid. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very arid. So, and then the Anishinaabe, rivers are being polluted by textile mills. So yeah, it's very different how ecological and climate change problems affect different peoples. But to me, it was super important to pay homage to Indigenous peoples who are thinking seven generations ahead and are not wasting the resources. And I think if we could be a little bit more like them in terms of
Absolutely.
How we value the earth and our resources, I think we'd all be in a better place.
Couldn't say it better myself. Here at Our Altered World, we're partnered with WCN, and we have had some fantastic NGO organizations on who have been speaking to very similar effects about A, looking backwards and learning from deep ecological knowledge, deep traditional ecological knowledge, and bringing that forward into conservation practices, but also about the disparity of how climate change is affecting us all globally. And I've been fortunate enough to have conversations with leaders in these spaces, people who are directly affected in these spaces. And listeners, again, if you're interested and you're a new listener here, feel free to go back through our back catalogue and learn about the knock-on effects of a lot of these climate problems and how they're being tackled. Now, Christine, We've talked about all these daunting challenges. We've talked about water pollution. There's deforestation. There's pollution. What moments during filming gave you real hope for the planet's future? Where you were like, do you know what? We might have this. This generation's actually onto something here.
You know, every one of the contestants was inspirational to me. I'll tell you about a couple of them. So in India, we visited Narayan. And like I said, these unscripted moments were just beautiful. So we visited Narayan in a small village in Rajasthan called Kerti. There are about 200 families that live in this village. And we were filming for roughly half a day. And he was taking us out to the family farm where they had a cistern. And he said, the water used to be at the top. And then we walked down the cistern and it was maybe a quarter filled. And he said, what used to, you know, water our fields for 14 hours continuously now only does for 4 hours a day. So that was real an eye-opening experience. But the love of the family in that episode was just evident. His father was the one that encouraged him to use his biology degree to really help him feed the world, right? So his mission is to feed the world. He developed a polymer that basically traps water at the plant's roots. So even in very arid conditions, this 100% bio-waste product, if you sprinkle it on your plants, it traps the water. And he showed us the growth from one field. He did beta testing. So one of his customers did not use the product, was using pesticides and other things like that. His field was twice as large. And they were able to get a second crop rotation in. To me, that's super inspiring. Like this, I'm like, this guy gets it. Like this should be a product that we use all over the world. It's 100%, like I said, 100% used from biowaste. So we're repurposing biowaste to help us plant more food and to get in a second crop rotation. That's amazing to me. I also love that they don't use any pesticides on their farms. So you can see all of the insects that had disappeared before came back. The insects, the birds, the small animals.
Driving away. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know your time in Costa Rica, I'm sure you saw a lot of that, like this untouched, pristine kind of environment, right? And this is what he has now. It's just amazing to me. But here's the thing that really... Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say it's very interesting that you bring up Costa Rica, as actually they're facing a huge problem with that at the moment because of pineapple plantations. So you have this vast rainforest filled with biodiversity being chopped down for pineapple plantations, which are causing huge amounts of issue for the environment, both for locals and knock-on effects for the species that are thriving in those environments. But we won't dive too much into Costa Rica just now. I'll bring it back to you, Christine.
Thank you. I appreciate what you said about that. I mean, that's horrible. And I hope that they've figured a way to, I don't know, maybe it's going to be government intervention that'll kind of minimize the impacts that have happened there. Anyway, but in Kirti, we're there for half a day. We're filming. And it's so cute because all of the villagers have come out. This is like a big hullabaloo, right? And we're on the second floor having lunch at his parents' house. And I look down, you know, on the second floor. You've got the grandmothers. They're all there and stuff. And we're all having a nice lunch. And I look down. There's a bunch of kids sitting on a stone wall. And they're waving and they're smiling and they're trying out their English. And they're saying hello. And Ryan turns to me and he says, "This is the first time white people have ever been to our village." I was like, "What?" I was blown away. And I was like, I felt this awesome responsibility and to showcase my culture in the best way. Note to self, I'm always going to carry gifts with me going forward because I just was like, oh my gosh, you know, they've opened up their village to us. This is incredible. I mean, I just was blown away. So there's these unscripted, beautiful moments that happen when you go to the country of origin. You really travel. I guess I would say that's the second mission of the Plus One Eco Odyssey, is to encourage Gen Z to really travel. I'm not talking going to Cancun. I'm talking about really going on the back roads, right? Seeing Costa Rica, seeing India, seeing all these beautiful places before they disappear, you know? And once you actually go there.
And also target your belief mechanisms, you know?
Yeah,
target these misconceptions that you may have developed through social media or word of mouth, where you realize, oh, actually, it's not like that. And you
right.
can educate yourself and grow forward in so many beautiful ways, you know, mentally, and then proceed outwardly, having that learning and having that knowledge. Now, Christine, you just spoke about these amazing community connections that you just had there. Was there any community-led initiatives on Plus One Eco Odyssey that you'd love to that you could expand on, or that you think that could be replicated as well in other communities?
I would love. So I'm going to tag on to what I was saying about Narayan, but I love the idea. The idea of private farms. I think corporate farms are harmful. And by bringing back the way that we used to farm without pesticides, you know, using EF polymer from Narayan to make sure that our crops grow and we can get a second rotation, I think having those private plots really, I think that could be transformational. I think there are a lot of issues with corporate crops. I know that they're needed because, you know, we need to feed the world, right? But my goodness, the pesticides, just the use of water, it's disheartening.
Do you ever see the opportunity for cross collaboration between your contestants? You know, you've mentioned all these different products. You think, wow, that could work well with that, and that could pair with that. And then we've solved a huge problem here now.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because some of the bio waste that Narayan is using, Jaya could also use with her company for fast fashion. So they've been talking.
Okay, I was just going to ask that. Do the contestants get this opportunity to actually engage in dialogue with each other to realize, oh, wait, because that's how you take an incredible invention or incredible movement and make it globally profound, honestly.
Absolutely. I think especially for the semifinalists who really got a lot of time together, I think that was super helpful. So Sid is out of Hong Kong. He's developed a company called ClearBot, where basically they have an AI-controlled boat that removes garbage from the water. So it removes, you know, in Hong Kong, they used to have people go out on a petrol boat, three or four people, and fish stuff out of the water. And this just goes out automatically. And he can clear now invasive species that, you know, cover lakes and stuff. He can clear. He's got bigger boats now. He's launching bigger fleets. So he's wonderful. I call him Mr. Hollywood. When we first met Sid, he did his interview with us, his video interview with the Hong Kong skyscrapers in the background. He was wearing sunglasses at like midnight.
Yes.
And he has a larger than life personality. He's a great guy. I'm sure he'll be super successful.
Climate and environmentalism is super cool.
It's my jam.
Yes, absolutely.
No, he was super cool guy, like, and so fun to hang out. But he was also such a gentle, sweet person too. Like, he was great with our other contestants. But they've all connected. I think there's something about Gen Z and their need for collaboration. So he and Jaya and Kushi and Kezia, I know that they all keep in touch, and I've introduced separate ones together because I think that their innovations might work together. So yeah, that's a big part of it too, is to increase your plus ones, right? To make sure we're building a community, right?
Yes. Well, I love how thought out that name was, Plus One Eco Odyssey. And on that note, I'm going to leave all of you guys a moment to think about that, as we'll have a quick break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Christine from World Tree Productions. Now, we've been talking all about her incredible reality show, Plus One Eco Odyssey, bringing entrepreneurs around the world working on amazing innovations in the climate and environment space to the forefront, to the chance to win a $50,000 cash prize alongside a one-year mentorship. Now, we have been speaking all about some of the initiatives that have been run by a few of the contestants that were lucky enough to make it through the casting process and take part in the show. Now, Christine, when the show was released, what was the initial reception like? You know, what was the buzz about it, and how do you think it resonated with the audiences that watched it the first time?
Well, we could tell from the comments and the views, you know, 500,000 views, that this definitely resonated with the audience. We self-produced.
And just to remind everyone, Christine self-produced this. So yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. So we self-produced it. We launched it on YouTube, which is Gen Z's favorite social media platform. And I think that made a lot of sense. We have a lot of comments that came back in terms of positivity and who their favorite contestants were and what their favorite shows were. We are going to be launching season 2 with a new media partner. We're looking at a new international distribution partner as well. So we may be on new platforms, but casting, when we get that going, I want to make sure that the contestants have the biggest audience possible. But the truth is, I mean, you know from the comments that come from different people, that they're really rooting for certain folks and certain ideas. So if you're a biologist, you might resonate with Kezia, who is all about trying to protect sharks and apex predators. So there's a big misconception about sharks. It's probably from, you know, Jaws, you know, the movie Jaws. People don't understand that we need apex predators to balance out ecosystems.
I had a very interesting conversation about this topic, about how media plays into our perceptions with animals. Most
100%.
Recently, we had the founder of the Global Penguin Society on, and we spoke about Happy Feet and the idea of where penguins are found. And the same thing applies negatively to so many species as well, like you just mentioned, with great whites and jaws. But this gives huge opportunity to, you know, start changing that dialogue, start changing those perceptions.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that was really interesting to me too is finding out from Kezia how many of these great whites are being killed every year, 100 million, mainly for shark fin soup. Right.
Huge
so
numbers.
In
wow.
Southeast Asia, it's considered an aphrodisiac. Doesn't work. But, you know, people cling to their traditions. And my hope is that people understand, you know, we're wiping out a species as we speak. And they're really, really important to regulating the health of an ecosystem. You have to have apex predators. That was part of the show that I thought was really impactful, is really understanding, you know, kind of that terrible statistic and how we need to do better. And one of the other interesting things, too, with their innovation. So right now, the way that they keep sharks and people separated is drum lines and nets, but it kills other species, too, like turtles and dolphins and, you know, other larger, you know, sea marine animals. So her invention actually uses science and what they have inside their kelp forest. It's a mechanical kelp forest. They have a magnet that repels apex predators. It repels bull sharks and it repels white sharks because they have this really sensitive organ. I'm going to forget the name of it up here. Yeah. So sharks are very, very sensitive. And so they hate kelp forests because it's too much activity. It's too much stuff. They don't like things brushing up against them. So a lot of seals will hide in kelp forests to stay away from these apex predators. So what she's developed is a kelp forest that's mechanical, that sticks out a little bit above the water, but it also sways, you know, and it replicates a kelp forest. And what's happening now is coral is attaching to it. So she's actually restoring coral reefs as well.
And amazing. The knock-on effects are just incredible, right? Wow.
And she's been able to safely keep people away from sharks, especially around these large commercial installations, which are in beach, you know, popular areas like in the Caribbean. And they 100% of the time have kept these major sharks away from people. So they're doing the right thing. And my hope is that they can also use it as, and this came out of, this was an inspiration that came out of one of the judges. They said, you really should be using this also as a reef mitigation, like a reef erosion mitigation strategy too. So what's been interesting is to see how the ideas that originally came in have morphed and grown and gotten bigger in terms of total addressable market based on what the judges were able to input, you know, to them. So yes, it's been amazing.
And it speaks well to how all of the little cogs of the show work so well together. You know, you're bringing these entrepreneurs from around the world who may not have had this opportunity or platform before, the opportunity to connect with leaders in this space, you know, who have this evidence-backed history of knowing what works and how it can work and integrate with other parts of the industry. Fantastic. Now, we've spoken a lot about this, the big prize pot. You've got $50,000. Now, how was this prize amount determined? You know, $50,000. How do we think, okay, this is what they need? And what are the expectations of how they'll use it to advance their project? Were there any where they're like, you have to use it in this space or a space that you would like to for them to use it in?
No, I mean, the way that we determined the $50,000 was we thought that was a significant enough amount of money to help a growing business get to the next stage of funding. So a lot of these companies were pre-seed ventures. So Jaya, for example, who's tackling fast fashion, she had the formula. She just needed to create a piece of fabric to then take it to the next round of funding. But that takes money and it takes time. And so $50,000 at that stage of growth can be instrumental in terms of helping a business grow. So in terms of tying it back to specific metrics, no, we let them spend it how they need to, but the mentoring helps guide them because, you know, you don't want to give someone $50,000 and just say, you know, and they're like, oh, I'm going to buy a Porsche with it. It's got to go back into the business, right?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
You describe the mentoring component tied to the prize. Who are the mentors? How are they matched to the winners and winner? And, and what kind of ongoing support do they provide?
So what we do is we do a custom questionnaire with the winner to find out what the pain points are of the business. And it changes constantly, right? So these businesses are growing and changing and evolving, right? Or pivoting. And so what we do is I have a touch base every month with our winner. And I say, here's who I've lined up as your mentor.
I love that you're still in contact like that. It's amazing.
Yeah, every month. And how are you doing? What's new with you? Are there any pain points you want to talk about? So we chat about that too. So I'm always a resource. But we also talk about mentorship over the next 3 months and what we need to do for them specifically. So if you're in the middle of a fundraising round, your mentorship might look very different from when you're doing a scientific formulation. So we might pair them with someone who has been through that drill with a venture capitalist and can have them look at their pitch deck, can help them hone their message, et cetera.
How do you find mentors who are willing to do this? You know, like,
I would say I have never had a problem finding a mentor, which is beautiful. Like, people will go out of their way to help young people innovate. They really will. So they're willing to give their time and their knowledge and their expertise. And so one thing I would say to your viewers is build your LinkedIn contacts, reach out to people you may not have ever reached out to before, but you have an interest in that area and they might be able to help you, and set up a call with them, right? You need to network constantly and build your mentor kind of base. So that when you do launch,
networking is how I ended up on this show. So.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So yeah, really work that. You know, I would, and even if you're an introvert, you know, as many entrepreneurs are, that's okay. You can send out a note to people and just scheduling a call. Have that bravery. Put yourself out there because people really do want to help. They really do.
I agree. I mean, there's so many people that have reached out to me throughout the course of my career, and I've just been like, yeah, absolutely. I'll write an email. I'll have a quick chat. You know, if I run into you at a conference, yeah, let's talk about it. Let's see what you're up to. And if you need some quick guidance, I can give you a few pointers. And, you know, I think that takes place to realize there's a human connection in all of us. You know, the willingness to help. There's this 100%. Shared goal, and this is a big shared goal. So now, we've spoken about the prize pot and the mentorship, but who went away with the prize for season one? Do you want to give that away, or do you want to send people to watch the first season?
So for sure. So I would tell people, watch the first season, especially if you're interested in applying to be on our show for season two. Go to plus and then the number one, ecoodyssey.com. And if you go under season two, you'll see there's a place where you can put your email. You'll be first on the list to hear about when casting opens up. So if you don't want to know who won season one, I'm going to give you an opportunity to duck out for 1 second while I share who the winner was, okay? So the winner was, who do you think it was, Neil? I know you've watched a couple of episodes.
I know some of the contestants that haven't won, and I'm pretty sure it's a female that won.
It was Jaya. So we, you know, when we went through the finals, it was her and Kezia, and that ended up in the finals. And Jaya just really was addressing a massive, massive problem that we thought really needed to be addressed. And so she ended up winning the prize. And what's interesting is, you know, having two females, you know, we had a very balanced cast, right? We had half male, half female.
STEM is such a male dominated field, and to have two female entrepreneurs in STEM in the final, yes, I'm
pretty
all
awesome,
for that.
Right?
I love that.
Here's the other interesting thing too, and I, of course, like I had no control over this. I have no control over how the judges judge, but it was really interesting to me because 1% of all VC funding goes to female founders, right? It was already less than 2%. Last year, 1%. So it's an abysmal statistic. So I was very pleased that Jaya won and that she was able to
feel like, I love all of you guys.
I do. I do.
You're like, this is just a bit special.
It made it really special. You know what I mean? It really did. And especially being a female entrepreneur myself, mm-hmm. I was like, fantastic.
That is beautiful. Now, all of the contestants must have gained so much, regardless of winning or not, by taking part in Plus One Eco Odyssey. Out of the past contestants, how many have gone on to launch the eco projects, or how many are like so much further along having taken part in the show than they would have been?
So let me give you some success stories. Narayan just raised $6.6 million in a Series A round. And he's expanding. He's expanding.
I know. Awesome. Yes.
And he's expanding now his distribution into the United States, where I'm hoping to help him as well with my contacts. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Kushi, she just launched her first commercial installation of her product. And she's on her second reality TV show. Good for you, Kushi.
Yes.
Third, Jaya, she's in the middle of a $500,000 pre-seed round, and she's about 50% closed. So she's right in the middle of it, doing wonderful. Yeah.
The ball has not stopped rolling for these guys.
I know.
We have to get them on the show. We've got to get our listeners listening about it.
Yeah. Yes. Get behind them. And then Sid from ClearBot, he raised $700,000 to build bigger boats. So now his boats can go out further. They can do a bigger area. And now they can remove invasive vegetation as well. So those are just four of the seven. Yeah, they're doing fantastic.
Listeners, guys, this just shows you how foundational opportunities like this are to really scale up and outwards, to really tackle the problems that are going to affect us all, that are affecting us all. And we won't hear about it. You know, like we, these are all passion projects. This is Christine's passion projects that's allowed this cascade of opportunity to flow into all of these incredible ventures. And we need more of this, guys. So thank you, you know, so much, even just today, you know, like putting your ears to this. We're not done just yet, but I want to thank you all for everyone that listens to this show, because you're the ones that are driving the investment in this. Because when they asked who wants this, who's going to spend money on this, who's going to hear about this, that's you guys here listening today. Now, talking about partnerships, you know, corporate sponsors, NGOs, academic institutions, what has been the most important with both, you know, the show's production, scaling it, and, you know, how you want to move forward?
So we have a relationship with the Nature Conservancy, so they were instrumental. So at the end of every show, we have three eco tips that anyone can do. You can be 4 years old, you could be 90 years old. But the idea is that each of us have a part to play in addressing climate change. And so the Nature Conservancy came up with these three tips for every show, and they were geared towards the actual topic of the show. So whether it was, you know, saving apex predators, or, you know, eliminating plastics, or, you know what I mean, things like that, how to be kinder to your lawn and not use pesticides. I mean, they came up with all sorts of tips. And they've been instrumental too, from just a promoting the show. So they've got a group of young ecologists, 30,000 of them. They're all young, and they promoted the show out to all of them and encouraged them to apply as well. So I don't know as of yet if any of the season one cast was attached to the Nature Conservancy, but I know that for season two, we probably will get some, which is amazing.
So looking ahead, season two. What does the future have in store for Plus One Eco Odyssey Season 2? Has the concept evolved?
So the concept has evolved. I mean, We are now talking to some groups in India about doing an India-specific show.
Wow.
We're talking about, what I'd love to do is have regional competitions that meld into a giant competition with a much bigger prize. But for now, we'll continue the same format that we have until we get to that place. But that is my
Christine
goal.
Christine wants global domination for
yeah!
the most positive outcome. We
yes.
have to root for that. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm hoping for. But season two will, again, be a global competition. We are seeking people from more countries than ever before. We're obviously looking for innovations that are really doing a lot to make big changes. So I would encourage everyone to apply. We're going to have a new cast of judges and a new host, and we're really excited about it. So I'll have more information to share about our media partner and other things like that coming out soon.
Wow.
Oh, and we also have we have huge sponsors too. So
everything is scaling up.
Yeah.
I mean, you've already mentioned earlier where viewers or contestants can nominate. Could you just reiterate that for them? So in case anyone wants to get involved and they've joined us later in the chat.
Yeah, for sure. So if you're interested in applying for the show, you can either reach out to me at info@plusonethenumberoneecoodyssey.com, or you can just go to our website, plusonecoodyssey.com, and go to season two and you'll see a little email capture there. Put your name in and you'll be first to know when casting opens. And I really hope to see a lot of people apply. It would be my goal. I would love to get back to Africa. I would love to expand to other areas like New Zealand and Australia. I'd love to see people all over Europe again. Yeah, and especially areas where it's hard to get to, whether it's Southeast Asia, where they're seeing the effects of climate change more than anyone. Yeah, that would be terrific. So please apply. You never know. You could be on the show and walking away with $50,000 and 12 months of really beneficial mentorship to help scale your business.
Honestly, priceless. Come on, guys, get involved, get those applications in. Now, Christine, we're coming to the end of our gorgeous, gorgeous chat this afternoon. What has been a single takeaway you'd love our viewers, I mean, and listeners to remember about the interconnectedness of people, places, and planet health? I'm just going to say that again. What is one single takeaway you want our listeners to remember about the interconnectedness of people, places, and planet health?
Just remember that the Indigenous have it right. You need to think seven generations ahead. Everything you do today affects people seven generations into the future. So try and have less of an impact on climate. There are small steps that you can take now, but that will reap big dividends in the end. And I think all of us can innovate. So really thinking through what we can do to solve big problems, you know, and it's going to take all of us coming together, all of our plus ones, to really pressure governments and big corporations to be more responsible with their footprint on this planet. So I would just say your voice matters and we'd love to tell your story. So please apply for the show. Check out season one on our YouTube channel, Plus One Eco Odyssey, and I hope you apply.
And do you have a final message of hope?
I do. If you have an idea, try it. Even if you get it wrong, it's 1,000 times better than trying to learn it from a book. I mean, one of my biggest idols is Jane Goodall. I met her years ago. And she didn't have an education, a formal education. She just went to Africa. And she was basically a secretary for someone that was taking care of an animal preserve. But she observed chimpanzees. She questioned and challenged ideas that they had about chimpanzees. Everyone thought that they were vegetarians. Well, no, actually, they kill colobus monkeys and they eat them. So she was able to challenge all these different ideas by going out there, getting involved, getting into the dirt, walking, you know, the preserve and really observing. So I would just say, if you have an idea, try it. Even if you fail, who cares? You're going to learn 1,000 times more than you would reading a book. So try it.
Exactly. Put yourself out there. Learn, grow, and who knows what you will achieve. Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining us today. I had a beautiful chat with you. And thank you all for listening to Our Altered World today. If you enjoyed the show, I'd love for you to visit our website, ouralteredworld.com, where you can join our community and find more information on upcoming shows. You can also find some of my work on social media at Flunking Monkey, FLUNKINGMONKEY. And until next time, I hope you all have a great day.
Thank you.